From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
We are 1,800 miles away from the southern border, and the American citizens are not safe because of failed immigration policies. This is the second time in just 2 years that an innocent Harford County woman has lost her life to a criminal in our country illegally.
Welcome to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. That was Harford County, Maryland Sheriff Jeffrey Guller on Saturday after the arrest of Victor Martinez Hernandez for the rape and murder of Rachel Morin, a mother of five. Now, despite the high-profile violent crimes being committed by some illegal aliens coming across our open southern border, as well as the warning of elevated threat of terrorist attacks in the United States, President Biden is reportedly preparing to announce a massive amnesty plan for illegal immigrants. Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn joins me in just a moment with the details. Another federal judge, this one in eastern Kentucky, issued a ruling today blocking the implementation of the Biden administration's Title IX rules, which trample on the rights of males and females in advancing the dangerous transgender ideology. Now, last Thursday, a judge in Texas put a stay on the policy in four states. District Judge Terry Doty said the unilateral change to the rules was a, quote, threat to democracy. Well, today's ruling impacts an additional six states. We'll talk with Attorney General of Louisiana, Liz Merle, who succeeded in last week's challenge to the Biden policy. And it would appear the Democrats have found another plank for their pro-abortion platform, IVF.
When that was taken away, we saw contraception was is now under attack. We see now IVF is now under attack. We saw what Republicans did just last week. And there are freedoms that are now under attack.
That, of course, was White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre creating her straw man, giving us a glimpse of what we are going to hear over the next 4.5 months. Abortion, contraception, IVF, all under attack. Really? So the left has what they think is their winning trio. Well, we're going to talk about it. FRC's David Clawson is going to join me with a legislative overview of what both parties are pursuing as it pertains to in vitro fertilization. Now, here's a question for you. We need to ponder this. Just because science enables it, should we pursue it? What ethical and moral consideration should play into the policy discussion about in vitro fertilization? Dr. Al Mohler from Southern Seminary joins me to discuss the issue as well as the recent resolution on the topic by the Southern Baptist at their annual convention. The website, TonyPerkins.com, lots of resources there for you. Be sure and check it out. Also download the Stand Firm app. You can do that at the App Store. And as we've been discussing, biblical truth is under attack in our culture and in our country. And we must defend the Christian faith. And right now, you can take advantage of FRC's $2.5 million challenge match as we come to the end of our fiscal year. And you can double your impact if you join with us before June the 30th. To join us in defending the faith, text the word DEFEND to 67742. That's DEFEND to 67742. Well, according to news reports and other sources, the Biden administration is planning to announce a massive immigration amnesty program as possibly as early as tomorrow. Now, that would provide this proposal, as we understand it, would provide legal status to illegal immigrants who are married to U.S. citizens and have lived in the U.S. for at least 10 years. The proposal, known as Parole in Place, would provide this amnesty to an estimated 1.1 million illegal immigrants. Now, such a plan would also defy current U.S. law, which prevents anyone who entered the United States illegally from obtaining a green card and being placed on a pathway to citizenship. They have to first leave the country and come back legally. Joining me now to discuss this is Senator Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee. She serves on four Senate committees, including the Senate Finance Committee and the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator Blackburn, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always good to have you on the program.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
So, Senator, what do we know about this proposal that is being floated by the Biden administration that would provide parole in place, the largest amnesty plan we've seen in decades.
Yes, indeed. And this is another way that this administration and Joe Biden keep trying to make illegal legal. We have seen this across the government, and especially when it comes to border security and immigration. And what we are hearing is that, again, they are going to defy the law. They are going to create a new law as an executive order. And in this, they're going to allow people that are married to stay in the country and get on that path to citizenship. And Tony, all of this is part of their goal to begin to legalize illegal immigrants before we get to November, because they want their votes and they want them to count in the census. So this is how they're planning to backfill the population that they've been losing from big blue states and big blue cities.
Now, Senator, this is a major change in immigration policy. Sure. Does a president have such authority to bypass Congress and set this policy?
He does not. Indeed, when Barack Obama did the DACA program for youth, he was told by the Supreme Court that he did not have that authority. You cannot execute an immigration law change without coming to Congress. Well, Barack Obama did it anyway and put DACA in place, and tomorrow will be 12 years since DACA was put in place. And now Joe Biden is trying to create all these new paths to citizenship and legalization for people that have come in the country illegally. And we hear that tomorrow is the day that he is going to announce this, and he will defy the Supreme Court. He will defy Congress. He will defy the rule of law. He's just going to go out there and he's going to do it and wait for somebody to challenge him to take it to court.
This sounds very similar to the student loan forgiveness plan that was announced right before the last election, only to be challenged in court and to be struck down as exceeding his authorities. Of course, he's continued to take steps to try to do this anyway. So this to me smacks of election year politics.
Oh, of course it is. And what you're going to see, Tony, between now and November, you're going to see all sorts of gimmicks. You talked a little bit about abortion and contraception and IVF. And these are gimmick votes that they are taking so they can say, oh, someone opposes IVF or contraception. And it is a gimmick, this student loan forgiveness, because he can't do that. The Supreme Court has told him he cannot do this. He does not have the authority. And likewise, they will tell him when it comes to this immigration plan, he can't do this. He cannot alter or expand or contract immigration law without first coming to Congress and having Congress take that vote.
Senator, this is very dangerous. Beyond the issue we're talking about of illegal immigration, which we see has deadly consequences, we saw that even this weekend. But this chips away at the very foundation of our nation being a nation that's ruled by law. This is more lawlessness.
Of course, it's more lawlessness. But they have been intent on degrading the rule of law, attacking the Supreme Court. And this is lawlessness. They've tried to normalize lawlessness, Tony. And we have seen this, their lack of respect for police, their lack of respect for the rule of law. This is the way they operate. And what happens when you try to normalize this lawlessness? You end up with chaos. And you have people that are fleeing these areas that are letting chaos carry the day, and they're moving to red states. They're picking up, they're leaving, and they're relocating. They're voting with their feet.
Right. The end game here for those that are breaking down our rule of law and advancing this lawlessness, when that chaos comes, it amasses more power in the hands of those who rule. So this is really moving us toward tyrannical government, is it not?
Well, and when you look at the Biden administration, look at the things they're doing to try to stay in power and how intent they are. You know, saying you can see a video of the president, but don't believe it. That's something that's been done by AI. And people know that is inaccurate. They're doing anything they can to collect power and to centralize power with the federal government with them in charge. They're trying to make certain that Democrats are in charge for the rest of our lifetimes and that they alone hold that power and make the decisions and therefore take power away from our local and state governments and give that power and authority to the federal government.
And each of us have a role to play in preventing that, and it's called being informed and voting. This fall's election is going to be critical in stopping that agenda from advancing.
Yes, indeed it is. And I was in Normandy just over a week ago for the 80th commemoration of D-Day and visiting with some of these veterans and hearing their stories and hearing how deeply they value U.S. citizenship and being an American and what that means. And then when you see the antics of what the left is trying to do, what the Biden administration is trying to do, it really heightens the reason that we should all heed Reagan's words of we don't pass citizenship, we don't pass freedom along in the bloodstream. Every single generation is going to have to fight for it.
Right.
So now is our time for that fight, and this is our worthy fight.
And Senator, by the way, congratulations. I know you've been tapped to be a co-chair of the platform committee at the upcoming Republican convention to help steer that process. How important is it that the Republicans put forward very clear principles based on the Constitution that contrast with the Democratic Party as we move into this fall's election?
Yes, and I co-chaired the platform committee in 2012, and we are hopeful that scheduling works out and I can lead that effort this year. We're still waiting to find that out. But Tony, it is so important that our party be able to articulate what we stand for and to talk about who we are and what we believe in. We are the party that believes in faith, family, freedom, hope, and opportunity, and preserving those values. We're the family we're the party that believes in a small federal government and sending power back to the states.
Yeah.
We're the party that believes in a military that is strong and peace through strength.
Well, I enjoyed working with you back in 2012. I hope I get the chance to do it again this coming July as we go to Wisconsin. Senator, always great to have you on the program. Thanks so much
good
for taking time
you.
To join
Thank
us.
Thank you.
All right.
Yes.
All right, folks. By the way, help us on that platform. Text the word LIFE to 67742. Don't go away. We're going to come back with more Washington Watch on the other side of this break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at The Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Monday. Again, if you would like to help us out, and as I said, our republic is made for participants, not spectators. We need your help to shape the Republican Party platform to make sure it stays strong on the life issue. Join us and lend your voice to state party leaders across the country. Text the word LIFE to 67742, and you'll get a link where you can weigh in on this issue. And obviously, I'm going to be talking a lot about this in the next couple of weeks leading up to the platform committee and the GOP meeting in Wisconsin coming up in the second week of July. Well, earlier today, a federal district court in Kentucky issued an immediate injunction against the Biden administration's Title IX rewrite, which covers the states of Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, Virginia, and West Virginia. Now, this decision comes in the wake of a similar decision last week in a federal district court in Texas, which covers the states of Mississippi, Louisiana, and Montana, and Idaho. Now, clearly momentum against the Biden administration's effort to replace biological sex with gender identity is building as attorneys general in red states work to protect women's sports and private spaces, as well as provide crucial freedom of speech protections. Joining me now to discuss this is Louisiana Attorney General Liz Merle, who brought this Title IX suit in Louisiana before the court. Attorney General Merle, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Thank you for having me, Tony. It's great to be with you.
So Liz, let me begin by congratulating you on this temporary injunction. Now, these rules were set to go into effect on August the 1st. So what does the judge, what does his ruling mean?
Well, it means that the federal government can't take any action against the state of Louisiana or any of our partner states under our injunction, and now under the Tennessee's injunction. Those states are also protected from any adverse action by the federal government for noncompliance with their regulations. They simply can't enforce them in our states.
This is going to be very unworkable, I would think, for the Biden administration, where you're going to have potentially half the states in the country are going to have injunctions against the implementation of these rules come August the 1st. Is this something that the Supreme Court is ultimately going to have to weigh in on?
I believe so. You know, this isn't the first time that this administration or the Obama administration, which kind of started this discussion with a Dear Colleague letter that was sent out to all the departments of education around the country some years ago. And there were injunctions issued against the Dear Colleague enforcement. There have been injunctions issued against the guidance that the Biden administration put out earlier. And now there are injunctions against the actual rules that they have put out. You know, I think I don't think they ever believed they would get away with this. I think it was politics that drove it. But at the end of the day, it is very divisive for our country.
I mentioned in the lead up that this was actually a court in Louisiana, not Texas, but it's in the Fifth Circuit, which also encompasses part of Texas. I would assume Texas has has a lawsuit as well, blocking the implementation of these rules.
So I don't think there's any Republican-led attorney general or governor that probably hasn't filed suit over this. It has enormous implications for our states. There's, I think, $16 billion in Title IX money just in Louisiana for next year. So no one can afford to face the threat of losing their Title IX money. And that's part of the problem. It forces us to then enforce this ideology all the way down to kindergarten and even preschool, and a preschool that's associated with a school that gets Title IX money. So it's incredibly invasive, it's very punitive, and it's extremely threatening to our funding.
General Merle, this is not just about sports. I mean, that's something that it's really kind of that the focal point is women's sports. I mean, Title IX was to advance women's sports, but this goes so much further in really invading private spaces of women. It is designed to really erase male and female as distinctions.
Correct. And in fact, the government attempted to avoid applying this to athletics. Now, athletics in secondary education, all the way, you know, all the schools that get this money, it applies to them. So they cannot really separate out athletics. They just tried to avoid stating overtly that it does, in fact, apply to athletics. But there isn't any real mechanism for them to implement these rules and then somehow come out with a different interpretation of the words that they've defined out of existence in this rule. So it is an effort to impose this ideology. It does threaten free speech. It threatens religious liberty, because anytime you take the position that biological sex matters within the meaning of male and female, and however that's applied, whether it's your bathroom, the locker room, the sports team, or the classroom, but in any event, our most private spaces and in places where it can matter physically and threaten harm to women, we're just written out of the equation.
Well, and as you made reference to free speech, this would force the pronoun usage in classrooms.
Yes.
That you have to use a preferred pronoun that may be false in terms of an individual's biological sex.
Well, and not only that, but even one time where you misgender somebody can be considered to be actionable discrimination under this rule. That's how punitive it is. So you can imagine a kindergartner. Now, a teacher has to enforce this rule or the teacher gets in trouble. And if the teacher doesn't, if the administration doesn't force the teacher to do it, then the administration gets in trouble. So it goes all the way up the chain, and it now imposes this regime to correct the kindergartner. Wow. Who has misgendered someone.
What don't we teach him to read?
It's going to force this questioning, right? What's your pronoun? What's your preferred pronoun? So I don't misgender you.
Why don't we spend time teaching him to read, maybe do math,
Well, that'd be good.
It would be. It'd be very helpful to the entire country. General Merle, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today. And again, congratulations for fighting and winning. And we'll watch for the next steps.
Thank you. There will be next steps, I'm sure.
All right. Louisiana Attorney General Liz Merle. This is another reminder of why all elections matter, not just presidential elections, but really we're seeing increasingly state attorney generals. All right, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch after this break.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
If you've not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, I encourage you to do that. Go to the App Store, Stand Firm. It is an interactive news and community that you can have right there on your smartphone. So go to Stand Firm or text app to 67742. It is our cancel-resistant platform. Knowing how the left is trying to cancel voices they do not agree with, we want to make sure that Washington Watch and the Washington Stand and the Stand on the Word, all of those continue. And you can find them all at the Stand Firm app. As I've discussed on Washington Watch last week, Senate Democrats failed to pass a messaging bill regarding in vitro fertilization, the sole aim of which was to misinform and scare voters regarding IVF. Now, contrary to its name, the Right to IVF Act includes measures such as legalizing human cloning. These are things that were the focus of laws to prohibit. It allows gene editing to produce designer babies, the creation of animal-human hybrids, that's right, chimeras, commercial surrogacy, and the trafficking and destruction of human embryos. Now, attacks on Republican senators who blocked this legislation have already begun, and this will remain a top item through the November elections. The Democrats, the left, feel like they have really a trio of issues: abortion, IVF, and contraception. Now, joining me now to discuss this is David Clawson, director of the Center for Biblical Worldview and our policy shop at the Family Research Council. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony.
So all but two Republican senators last week voted against the Democrats' IVF bill. Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer also blocked a Republican IVF bill. So where do things stand right now on Capitol Hill as it pertains to this issue of in vitro fertilization?
Yeah, that's right, Tony. There was a lot of action last week, as you said. The Democrats, led by Chuck Schumer, blocked the bill, the IVF Protection Act introduced by Senators Ted Cruz and Katie Britt. And then the following day, the Democrats' bill, which is actually a series of four bills that have been put together, kind of known as the Right to IVF Act, that failed to clear the 60-vote threshold. And so right now we're kind of at a standstill. Of course, the majority leader could bring that bill back at a later time if he chose. But for now, neither one of those bills is moving right now.
All right. So I want to very quickly look at both of these bills, because there's kind of a panic right now because of an Alabama court decision. And all of a sudden, people started running, saying that there's an effort to outlaw in vitro fertilization in the country, which is simply not true. No state has attempted that or done that. It simply said in that court decision that the product of IVF, these are children. And we know that to be the case, an embryo, fertilized embryo. I mean, it's an embryo. It is a has all the potential of a human being. So let's talk about what these two bills do. First, let's talk about the Democratic bill, which we've talked about before in this program. It is a smokescreen when it says it is a right to IVF, because it is a Pandora's box of other things that are actually being pushed in this bill.
Yeah, we can call it a Pandora's box, or really just a wish list of the IVF industry, Tony. And I think a lot of people don't realize it, but the IVF industry is actually completely unregulated. So it's already very, you know, unregulated. That's kind of the Wild West. But if they were able to get these four bills that the Democrats have introduced, it would do a whole host of things, some of which you just mentioned, Tony. One thing I'll add, which is really interesting, one of the bills kind of in this package called the Access to Family Building Act explicitly overrides the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So again, it's just interesting. They go out of their way to say that the 1993 law that passed Congress almost unanimously would not pertain to the situation, which that means the protection that employers, including religious organizations, have, well, they could be required to provide treatments, right, and other things that violate their religious beliefs.
At the very last minute, they amended it to pull that portion out because they knew that was a killer, because people started asking the question, why of all laws is this exempted from the Religious Freedom Restoration Act? But the human-animal hybrids, what does that have to do with IVF?
It has nothing to do with IVF, Tony, and I think that's why a bill like this, again, is just so problematic. And I think it speaks to the fact, Tony, that Democrats in an election year trying to support the president's flagging campaign right now are really trying to throw everything they can at the wall. And they realize, right, abortion, right, IVF, and these issues are things they think they can win on.
Very quickly, the Republicans have a bill as well, but it has some problems. It has no guardrails.
That's right, Tony. It has no guardrails. It specifically says that it would require states that receive with their Medicaid funding they couldn't prohibit IVF if they wanted to receive this funding. But the problem is they don't define what prohibiting would look like. They don't really define any of these issues. And so this couldn't, you know, if a state wanted to put just common sense protections within the IVF industry, potentially those would come into conflict with this legislation.
For instance, we know that at least 10 to 12 embryos are created in the IVF process, and there's no regulation of that. And those excess embryos are either frozen, destroyed, or sometimes experimented upon. So if a state wanted to, which some states have, restrict that, that could run afoul of even the Republicans' bills.
Yeah, that's right, Tony.
All right, David, we're up against a break. I want to thank you for joining us. But, folks, we're going to continue this conversation. Dr. Al Mohler joins me after the break. Just because science allows it, does that mean we should pursue it? What ethical guidelines should we have as we talk about IVF? That's next. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation. bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at The Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Stand member today.
This is Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us on this Monday. Be sure and check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. And again, tell Republican Party chairs to protect life in the 2024 GOP platform, to sign the petition urging them to support the party committee delegates who fight to keep pro-life values in the 2024 Republican Party platform. Text LIFE to 67742. That's LIFE to 67742. Our word for today comes from 1 Chronicles chapter 5. The sons of Reuben, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh had 44,760 valiant men able to bear sword and shield, to shoot with the bow and to be skillful in war, who went to war. They made war with the Hegrites, the Jeter, Nasha, and Nodab, and they were helped against them, for they cried out to God in the battle. He heeded their prayer because they put their trust in him. So the sons of Reuben, Gad, and half-tribe of Manasseh are noted here for three defining characteristics. They acted on the word of God. God gave them a promise that they would have land and told them to act upon it, and they did. They called on God for help. They were prepared and participated in God's plans, but difficulties arose. And just because God is in it, that doesn't mean others won't be against it. And they believed. They believed that when they called upon God, he would answer them. They trusted in God. A good model to follow. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, go to frc.org/Bible or text Bible to 67742. Last week at their annual meeting, the Southern Baptist Convention adopted a resolution expressing grave moral, biblical, and theological concerns about in vitro fertilization, or IVF. Now, since the Alabama State Supreme Court recognized the dignity of embryos earlier this year, IVF has become a political flashpoint. As I discussed last segment, Senate Democrats recently brought an IVF messaging bill to the Senate floor for a vote, demonstrating their desire to use IVF as a wedge issue. And the Southern Baptist Convention resolution has led to well, let's just say incorrect information from the legacy media that further distracts from the real issue. What I want to explore here is that if science makes it available, does that mean we should pursue it? And what ethical and moral and theological boundaries should we be looking to? Joining me now to discuss this and more is Dr. Albert Mohler, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's the author of many books, including Tell Me the Stories of Jesus, The Explosive Power of Jesus' Parables. Dr. Mohler, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Tony, it's always good to be with you. Thank you.
So speaking of legacy media, I want to play a clip of Morning Joe weighing in on this topic of the Southern Baptist and IVF. Play clip number 8, please.
My family knows about this personally. Family's desperate to have babies. I mean, I grew up, I grew up in the Southern Baptist Church. And this is, again, I think there's a very extreme view for the convention to take on the whole.
Yeah.
I will just say, if there is such value for life, then I think the Southern Baptist Church should have a very, very harsh, direct statement on the death penalty, on war.
Dr. Mohler, I'm going to let you take on that line of reasoning and argumentation.
Well, you know, Joe Scarborough is a disappointment at so many levels. You know, he was elected as a Republican member of Congress and frankly voted in a basically pro-life pattern during the time he was in Congress. Wasn't very vocal on the issue. I guess now we know why. He's just become a part of the cultural left. And when it comes to the issue of abortion, and especially as it relates to Christianity, he just lies. So, for example, you know, he's come out and said that the Christian church was basically pro-choice for the first 20 centuries until the issue of abortion was hijacked by Republican operatives. That's absolutely ridiculous, as you know. It is a contradiction of clear biblical teachings. It's also contradicted by the evidence of the early church, which so quickly, in documents such as the Didache, came to the conclusion that having anything to do with abortion was incompatible with being a Christian. So it's just misrepresentation. It's what you expect from MSNBC, right?
Not to mention that it was the Christian church that went out and rescued the babies that were abandoned.
Absolutely.
The exposure
Absolutely.
To die because they were unwanted. So let's talk about, of course, he switches arguments. He doesn't really stay with the IVF. He switches over to war, which the Southern Baptist has spoken to that issue, too. But we won't go there today. Let's talk about the Southern Baptist Convention taking this position and releasing a statement on a current public policy issue.
Right. Well, you know, that's what resolutions are for the Southern Baptist Convention. It's a way for the Southern Baptist messengers, as we call them, from our churches, sent by the churches to make a public statement of Christian witness on these issues. This was the first time the Southern Baptist Convention has spoken clearly to the IVF issue, and it did speak clearly. For that, I'm very thankful. But remember, Tony, it's just a part of our moral responsibility these days to understand that when Christians get together, there are issues, and the Christian conscience has to speak out on these issues. Southern Baptists were too late to get into the game on abortion, too late to come to the defense of the unborn. Thankfully, we got there. On the issue of IVF, frankly, we're already late, but it's very important that we speak biblically.
Well, I think the timing of the resolution last week, when you look at the backdrop of what took place in the Senate, made it very timely. And I think they're happy if we're talking about things that are not relevant, if they're not application of biblical truth to current pressing moral and social problems. And that's, quite frankly, I think that's the description Jesus said, we're salt and light, both in our orthodoxy as well as our orthopraxy, that we are both operating from our theological construct and what we're talking about, but also how we're living this out. So I want to do both in our time together in talking about both this policy position, the ethical, the moral, the theological boundaries that Scripture provides, but then as Christians, how should we be operating in this culture as it pertains to this issue?
You know, I think it's really important that Christians step back and say, well, all right, it is an unalloyed good thing for a married couple, a man and a woman married, to desire a child. It is a heartbreaking thing when they face difficulty having a child. My wife and I were there for years, and we know the struggle with infertility. And so it's just wonderful to want a child. And every single child is made in God's image, regardless of the circumstances of that child's conception or parentage or birth. The Christian church, as you pointed out, has always said the desire for a child for a married couple is good, just an unquestionable good. And that child is a good. But that doesn't bless every sexual act that brings a child into being. That doesn't bless every medical technology. And certainly when it comes to IVF, I think Christians have just not given time to think through what's at stake. And to be honest, the situation has changed somewhat over the last several years. And I think many Christians don't know what IVF really represents these
right,
days.
Right. They actually don't know the process. So in this process That's of right. IVF, where there is an excess number of embryos that are created through this process, you could have anywhere from a dozen excess right. embryos to see That's which right. ones actually are work because of the expense of the process. So this was a debate, I don't know, mm-hmm. back when George W. Bush was president. There was a debate about these frozen That's embryos right. and what happens with them.
Absolutely.
And we had snowflake babies. These were babies, these embryos,
right.
frozen embryos that were adopted. So the question here is, what happens to these embryos that are created? As you said, they hold the image of
right.
of God. What
right.
happens to those who are not brought forth in the pregnancy?
This is an absolute test, Tony, as to whether we've been honest all these years when we've said that we believe that life begins at conception, which means fertilization. If we believe that, then we believe that in every single case, for every single embryo, under every condition. And I do believe we mean that, but we better mean it and understand that that's going to require us to speak up for every embryo at every stage of development in every context. And right now, and this is just what's happened, when the first IVF happened, it was, you know, they were referred to as test tube babies, and first in the United Kingdom and then in the United States. Extremely expensive. And so the very miracle was that there was one embryo that was transplanted. Now, as Christians, we have moral concerns about that just in terms of abstracting reproduction from the context of marriage, the conjugal union of a man and a woman.
Right.
But the big issue came with the transformation of IVF into an industry, and that's what it is. It's big money. It's an industry. And for pure reasons of what now are described as best practices, and this is about finance as well as, frankly, the moral insult to the embryo, as you say, they're creating multiple excess embryos. In these just what are considered standard practice for IVF. And so you have hundreds of thousands, probably already now well north of 1 million human embryos that are actually described as excess. Some of them are right now frozen. Some will be subjected to medical experimentation. It takes us back to the Bush issue. And all of them eventually will be destroyed. So if we believe that life begins at conception, fertilization, as we said, we have a grave, monumental moral crisis. One final thing. We also know that under the practice of IVF right now, they're doing embryo sorting. They're rating embryos. This is eugenics. They're, in other words, saying this embryo we want, that embryo we don't want. The other thing is it's abstracted from marriage. So now you have same-sex couples. You have two men who say they're having a baby. It's by IVF. It wasn't the intention of those who brought about the very first IVF procedures, but that's where it is. You have single women who are simply saying, I have a right to have a baby. This is becoming a very, very difficult challenge for the Christian conscience.
You also have multiple parental embryos being created, so not just two.
Absolutely.
So there's a number.
No, absolutely. It's commonly these days, it's between 8 and 16.
So how do we deal with this? I mean, there's the underlying issues you started out with is that it's a good thing for a man and a woman who are married right. to want to have children, and there are obstacles in some cases, and this was a path. But now we see how this often happens with technology. It's
yes.
exploited to go way beyond the
That's
boundaries
right.
of what is morally ethical. What do we do?
Well, I'll be honest, Tony, I advise Christian couples, married couples, that means a man married to a woman, not to use IVF technology. And at the very least, to use it, if they choose to use it, only in ways that fully respect the dignity and sanctity of life, and that means of every embryo. So that means every embryo that is created in the process transferred to the womb. Now, I don't think there are many doctors who will do that. There aren't insurance companies, I think, that will pay for that. They're going for this more cost advantageous way of creating all these excess embryos. So in other words, I'm trying to be intellectually honest. There are ways of reducing risk. I don't think there's any way of avoiding the risk. But the big question is, who's going to speak up for the embryos? And the reality is, you've got Christian couples that think there are no big moral issues with IVF. And I think it's really important that Christian pastors and an organization like the Southern Baptist Convention be very clear. There are grave moral issues at stake here.
There are other options available for men and women that are struggling to have children. There's other therapies, other avenues that they can pursue that do not have the moral and ethical implications that IVF has developed.
No, you're exactly right about that. And of course, a lot of medical practitioners just want to ignore, because it's become a giant industry, the IVF industry. They want to ignore the moral complications. But yes, and by the way, one of the things we need to recognize, and I so appreciate the fact you mentioned the early Christians rescuing the abandoned babies. This is what many Christian couples are now doing with the frozen embryos. And you mentioned snowflake adoptions. And, you know, you wouldn't want to have to do this any more than you would fail to cry out the grave moral evil of abandoning a child. But once a child's abandoned, it is a wonderful, God-honoring thing to save that child. And I think many Christian couples wrestling with this, they need to understand that it's an unfortunate moral reality that there's so many embryos out there. And I think it's a good and honorable thing that so many Christians are seeking now, Christian couples, to adopt them.
So, Dr. Marlowe, we just have a couple minutes left. I want to shift for the last couple of minutes on the policymakers. This is our public policy and the moral and ethical implications here are intersecting. So what is the path forward for our policymakers as it pertains to this? Because some of them are running scared over this issue and just doing whatever, just to say they did something.
Well, you know, Tony, I think we're both able to remember when Roe v. Wade was handed down. And quite frankly, the issue was, how in the world do we awaken the evangelical conscience over this? It took some time. I think it's going to take time on this issue. And the many politicians, and frankly, they call themselves pro-life. And yet some of them are now offering bills in support of IVF, completely ignoring the destruction of so many embryos, human embryos that are involved. And so I don't think we should minimize the political challenge we face to try to work for the legal protection of the unborn at every stage, and that means also the embryonic stage. But quite frankly, we need to make certain that our elected representatives and candidates who call themselves pro-life understand that pro-life means pro-life. We've said at every stage of development, from fertilization until natural death, did we mean it? We better make sure they mean it. And, you know, I think we will acknowledge there's a learning curve here. We want to help people understand this, but I'm afraid we're going to find out there are an awful lot of people who were pro-life when it was more convenient than, as you well know, after Dobbs. And we've got lots of fronts on which to fight.
Dr. Marlowe, I think this is just yet another example of where truth is standing counter to the culture today, and it is going to be a true test of whether or not we will stand on that truth.
I agree with you, and I want to tell you I really appreciate the fact that you've taken this on so directly in our consideration. We all want to be faithful as Christians, and it's going to take some talking about this issue and thinking it through, so thank you.
Well, always appreciate your insights, Dr. Moeller. Love having you on the program. Thanks for taking time to join us today.
God bless you.
Dr. Al Moeller, and we need to be prayerful about these issues, not dismissive of those challenging, those in challenging situations, but we have to remain faithful to the truth. All right, folks, out of time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means,
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.